You're listening to Coffin Cast with your host, Kristen. Please be aware that this is a dark subject matter and may be difficult for some listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to Coffin Cast episode 24. My name is Kristen. Hope your week is getting off to a great start, or a great middle, or a great end. Whatever, you know, wherever you are in the week when you're listening, thanks for being here. I hope your week is going fantastic. So this week's episode of Coffin Cast is a little bit different. As I've been mentioning for the past few weeks, I did have an interview lined up with the amazing Kevin Allison from the Risk podcast. It happened, and he was amazing. He speaks so eloquently about the topic that we cover in Coffin Cast, which is death. And anybody who knows me knows that my favorite podcast since I've been listening to podcasts is Risk. I started in 2013. The first episode I heard went over a man removing his grandmother, I believe, her body, which was frozen into a chair, pulling her out of that chair. And I knew from that episode on that I had found my home, so to speak. So when I casually, just playfully messaged Kevin saying, or tweeted to Kevin saying, you should be on my podcast. And then he messaged back, sure, email me. And then I had a full-blown panic attack because what was I going to talk to Kevin Allison, my hero, somebody I watched from childhood on MTV's The State? What was I going to talk to him about? His show was so funny. It is so raw and hilarious. What was I going to talk to him about? But I knew I couldn't pass this up because I would kick myself later. I would hate myself later if I did. So we emailed back and forth a little bit, and then he reminded me of a few of the episodes that delve into death. And I was like, of course! You know, Risk goes to places that our culture does not typically go. Goes through kink, through death, through, you know, child abuse, through, it's basically people being vulnerable, getting up on stage, taking a risk, see what I did there, and telling these stories that they typically would be terrified to tell their best friend, but they're getting up on a stage and doing it, or, you know, doing a recording of it for the masses. And Risk is a super successful podcast, so when you tell your story on Risk, it's getting shared with hundreds of thousands, maybe even millions of people. So I couldn't pass up this opportunity, but I'm going to tell you, I have severe social anxiety. Part of why I am a solo podcaster, I don't have a co-host, I rarely, well, now I've done an interview, but I don't typically do interviews, is because I get flustered talking to somebody at a drive-thru. I get nervous. I have to rehearse the story in my head. I've had such bad social anxiety since I was in high school. And here I was talking to the person that made me want to be a podcaster, that was my hero since I was like a little kid. I loved him since I was little. And here I am interviewing him as my first ever interview. I'm gonna tell you what happened. The interview, I think, went okay. On his end, it went great. He was so clear, so wonderful. He had stories to share. It was like I was listening to my own little personal Risk episode. But when I got on and I started to talk, I would go off on these tangents that wouldn't have a resolution. I started out the episode because he's so clear and outgoing and happy and boisterous in the nicest sense of the word. He's very gregarious, very happy. And here I am trying to match that energy, and I feel like when I was listening back to it, for the first two questions, I was like yelling into the microphone, and I'm like, God, what must he think of me? Because I was so nervous. And we were on Skype talking back and forth, and he recorded his end of it. I recorded my end of it, so that way it was nice and clear and you wouldn't get that Skype garble that you sometimes get. And I had to look at him and talk to him, and he was talking to me, and that made me even more nervous, because I was like, oh, well, if I don't see him, maybe I'll be better with it. Maybe I won't be as nervous. But I had to see him, and he had to see me, and I was like, crap, I didn't put on makeup that day. I looked my worst. My webcam was at a low angle, and you know when you turn on your front phone how terrible you look? I mean, I'm a chubby girl anyway, but like, holy cow, my face looked massive. And I was just like, oh my God, this is the scariest thing I've ever done. And so when you go into this interview, here's some things I want you to know. I was extremely nervous. For the first two questions, I was very loud. I tried to level it off. If I wasn't able to do that well enough, I apologize. I did try my best. Also, the way that we recorded it, it was very hard to match up our audio files together. And I tried to do it that way, but it would never get right as good as I wanted it to. So there's some things that kind of got left in the wash, as it were, you know, my responses, my giggles while he was talking, things like that. So how I had to edit it to make it at least somewhat professional and cohesive, I had to take my segment of me talking and then paste his segment of his response right after. So you miss out, I think, a little bit on the back and forth between us a little bit. But mostly it was just me giggling or laughing or him laughing or responding and acknowledging statements and things like that. So I did my best. I am still learning. If I'm able to figure this out before too long, I'm going to try to re-edit it and re-release it so that you get everything involved. But, you know, I wanted to get this out on Monday because that's what I do. I get it out on Monday for you every week. So I hope, you know, the message is still there, and I hope it sounds good. Kevin was absolutely so gracious, so kind, and so understanding, and I really appreciate him taking the time from his very busy schedule to talk with me. So that being said, we have other things to cover in the episode as well. I'm going to play a song from Uncommon People at the end of the episode as well, so you can hear that, because I think the message of that song kind of weaves in with the Risk Coffin Cast mashup. Also, I am going to be announcing the winner of the 2,000 listens giveaway at the end of the episode, so make sure that you're listening for that. So with no further ado, let's go ahead and get into the interview with Kevin Allison from Risk. Welcome to Coffin Cast episode 24. My name is Kristen. We have a very special episode for you today, and also a very special guest. I'd like to welcome from the very brave, very funny podcast, Risk, Kevin Allison. Kevin, thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, thank you so much. It's an honor to be here.
Risk is, at its essence, a storytelling podcast. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, it's, you know, like, it takes its sort of original, like, inspiration from shows like The Moth, for example, or even This American Life. But early on in the days of podcasting, I realized, oh, there's a lot of stuff that you can't say on those shows. You know, I realize that, you know, there is another American life sort of.
And it breaks down, like I was going to say that it breaks down a lot of taboos that, like you said, we don't talk about in American life. And I think one of those taboos, and kind of where it meshes in with Coffin Cast a little bit, is death is a big taboo for us. It's not something that we discuss a lot. And I love how Risk kind of goes there. And it, you know, it like you said in your book, it's unflinchingly honest or unfiltered honesty. Yeah. And I think that's part of like why it's going to be a good kind of mashup.
I was going to say that a lot of psychiatrists and sociologists notice that in Western culture, especially, we avoid thinking about death or talking about death or preparing for death, you know, any of these things that, you know, maybe in hunter-gatherer societies or things like that might have been very ritualized and very, you know, much a part of the process. We avoid that stuff. And oftentimes you'll find that when people are having near-death experiences or helping someone to die or dying themselves, they're just going through a process that they're like, well, what the fuck? No one ever told me about all of this, you know? And so, yeah, so I think that that's one of the ways that Risk can be hugely helpful, is to have people who, you know, lost a loved one or lost a pet or almost died themselves or were very briefly dead themselves, to really take us on that journey and like get into the nitty gritty of their thoughts and feelings and experiences going through it.
Right. Absolutely. I agree. And so in the spirit of Risk and being unflinchingly honest, I do have a question for you. Kevin, what would your perfect death look like? If you could say, this is how I want to die, this is how I'm going to die, what would it be? What would it look like?
It's so funny. When I was in high school and college, I used to joke that I wanted to be gored to death by a wild rhinoceros. And that was just because that was silly old me who didn't think that death was even, you know, something I'd ever really have to deal with. You know, just thinking up the most outrageously ludicrous seeming thing I could think of. That's really, really a great question. Another taboo subject is suicide. And I am the kind of person who has gone, I struggle with a lot anxiety and depression, more so depression than anxiety. And, you know, I go through these periods where it becomes more acute, the depression, and then I go through periods where I'm fine and have had lots of it, worked with lots of antidepressants over the years. But, you know, it's interesting because that suicidal ideation, it just very easily creeps back in if several things go wrong in life, you know? So I can't help but have little fantasies around that. But I have to admit that when you ask that question, I have not done very much thinking about an ideal, a happy, a healthy way to be going out. You know, I've thought a lot about, oh, all the ways I might go out if I just decided to end it, you know. But yeah, I suppose that the best way for me to go out would be to have some friends and family nearby and to be in a very comfortable place where I was able to do plenty of meditating and do plenty of journaling and do plenty of, like, you know, enjoying the good life to the extent that I still could, you know, right up to the very end, you know. So I think the first thing that comes to mind is being in a very comfortable place, but also a place where a lot of processing is happening, a lot of like saying goodbyes to people, a lot of like, I don't know. I'm forever a journaler, you know, like in therapy just yesterday, I was fantasizing, you know, There's so many stories that I've told on Risk that were incredibly revealing about me. What people don't know is that there's so many stories that I have not told on Risk for a whole variety of reasons. You know, I'm a very kinky person, and it kind of kills me that I can't tell a lot of my most transcendent kinky experiences because of the privacy of the other person, because the other person would feel like, whoa, that was really intimate between the two of us. And I mean, I always change people's names, but nevertheless, people still feel a little weirded out. But there's also a lot of stories that I'm afraid to tell because I'm like, man, would that be considered politically incorrect, or would people take that and run with it in, you know, start twisting my words, you know? And so I was fantasizing with my therapist yesterday. I was like, you know, right before I die, I want to make sure I put together the memoir where every story is told.
So what we're going to do, you and I, we're going to listen to some of the clips from Risk that do touch upon death and dying and losing people. And then we're just going to chat about them a little bit. So the first one we're going to listen to is The Carnival, which can be found on episode 846 by Sarah Long Hendershot.
I take a bite of my tuna sandwich. Don't get tuna at a gas station. I take a bite of my tuna sandwich and I say, oh, this tastes really not so great. I hope I don't get food poisoning. And Shane instantly lunges across the seat, grabs the tuna sandwich out of my hand and takes a giant bite of it. And I said, why did you do that? And he said, if you die, I want to die. And furthermore, why are we even here if we're going to die? What's the point? And I thought, all right, I got to give this kid something. And you know what? I didn't have heaven to give him. To me, I'm sorry. Heaven is a cop-out. I don't believe in it, and I wasn't going to lie to my kid. So what I said to him, I took his beautiful little face in my hands and I said, do you not go to the carnival because you have to go home at the end of the day? And he kind of stared at me. And he stopped asking questions about death from that moment on. He did.
So Sarah Long Hendershot has shared several stories on Risk, and, you know, it's interesting, her son often shows up in these stories. So here, you know, a neighbor has died, and that neighbor just happened to have formed a close relationship with Sarah and her son. And now her son is freaked out. You know, to know that that can happen, that you can become very, very intimate with someone and have someone mean a lot to your day-to-day life and then lose them. So I think that it's pretty fascinating and it's pretty profound because it reminds us that, you know, this humbling experience of suddenly someone not being there is, I think, one of the most unsettling things that we all have to face in our lives. You know, like one of the reasons people don't like to think about death so much is because it does do exactly what Shane was talking about here. It does like throw everything into question. You know, like, wait, if this could all, like, if we're all so vulnerable, actually, that we could just be gone in a flash for reasons that we might not have even anticipated, what is the point? What are we doing here? And so I really, really love how she comes back with this whole idea of living fully, making the most of all of it, because this is what you got. And another thing is that, you know, there's some honoring of death. Like it's important for us to remember that we grow, we deepen when we deal with death. You know, like we were talking before about a first death experience for me, and you know, I'm one of those people. I'm about to turn 50, but I really haven't had a lot of very intimate people in my life, people who I was super close to as friends or family members who passed away. You know, grandparents when I was a little kid and that sort of thing. I have a step-nephew who did pass away, but even him I was not especially close to. But I did have a pet who died when I was 9 years old, a little mouse. I had at one point fixed his cage so that I had transformed the top of it. There was no ceiling. The ceiling to his cage broke. So I duct taped the screen from a screen window to the top of his cage. And he quickly learned to run up the top of his water bottle and then climb upside down on the ceiling of his cage like Spider-Man. One day I came in from a shower. This was when showers were brand new to me, you know, like I had been taking baths previously. And he had fallen from the ceiling and hit his neck on his food dish and was convulsing, was shaking. And it freaked the fuck out of me. You know, I was like, oh my God, what's going on? What's going on? I was yelling, Mom, 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 what's going on? She ran up and she saw him shaking and she was like, oh gosh, Kevin, he's not going to make it. And sure enough, like within moments, he stopped, you know. And I think I was feeling exactly what Shane was feeling in that clip. It really made me feel like, oh my God, we're so vulnerable. Like this unanticipated thing suddenly just wiped him out. And it was hard to process. Like I out of popsicle sticks, I made a little cross and buried him in the yard. And you know, like, I've actually told that story in the context of another risk story before, but used it as comic relief, actually, because it's like, I mean, that is a very unimportant sounding death, the death of a mouse. But, you know, like when I really, if I'm really true to how it felt to me back then at the time, it really was a first experience of, oh, I had a lot of affection and had built some intimacy and some, you know, daily relationship with this animal and watched the animal die, which is a freak out, you know? So yeah, I think that we're very, very afraid in general of dealing, you know, of thinking, oh my God, what's it going to be like to die? Or what's it going to be like to lose someone? But actually having the experience of it can really help to deepen us, you know, okay, actually feeling through those feelings. Well, and I think that, you know, pets, that is actually one of the good things about pets is that, you know, their lifespans are a lot shorter. So people are guaranteed to be experiencing the death of pets a lot more often. And it kind of helps to deepen us and prepare us, I think, a little bit for those rarer experiences of losing people that we're especially intimate with.
That's actually a perfect segue into our next clip, which is For the Love of Charlie by David Crabb. And that's on episode 936.
And he gave Charlie and his little Ivy the first shot. I remember halfway through, the way I worded it was so weird, I just blurted out, please tell me this is a valid choice. It was such an unromantic way of saying it. I just blurted that out. And he looked at me. I'll always remember. I was like, you know, we barely knew this doctor. And he looked at me and he had tears in his eyes. And he said, this is a valid choice. He said, I've talked to all those people out there about how hard you guys have fought. And you should be really proud of yourself. And then he gave him the second shot. It happened so fast. It's just like they say. It's just like everything stops. And then he took out his stethoscope and he felt around, which seems so weird. I guess they need to be sure. And he said, he's gone.
So that story is the story I tell everybody about when I'm talking about Risk, because that is the story that I basically identify Risk with, because it's so painful. I literally, every time I listen to it, I'm a mess. Why do you think, now we talked a little bit about pets dying and things like that. Why do you think when your pet dies, it hits so differently? Like, it's so much different than your grandparent or your friends or something like that. Why do you think that hits so hard?
He actually says something along these lines during the story, but because I lost a pet this past July, my cat Donkey, who I had raised for 13 years, who was a very unique individual as a cat, like an incredibly sweet, calm, meditative, just a sweetheart, just a baby doll. And I had such a relationship with that cat. Donkey was a similar thing where he became very ill very suddenly. And there was this process of him being in the hospital where all of a sudden there were several $1,000 options of things that they might be able to do to help him out. And you're in this weird situation where you're like, am I making this worse? Am I making it better? How much can I afford? You know, it wrecks you. And that story that we just heard a clip from by David Crabb really goes through all that stuff. But David says something in the course of that story that I think is really profoundly true. When you have an intimate bond with an animal, it's a little bit different because you don't have language. You don't have, you know, the way of intellectually communicating the way we do with other people. But you do have physicality, and you do have this, you are also an animal. So you have this connection to them, which is, the bonding is just kind of unique. You're very, very physical with them, and you're very, very they're very much in your life every day, you know? Like, well, I have a kitten now, and with both Donkey and my new kitten, Quincy, you know, I travel a lot, and whenever I come home, there is just like, they are so happy to see me back, you know what I mean? So yeah, there's just this physical bond, and there's this way of communicating without language that is just very, it just becomes a part of your daily experience that is kind of different. So I think that, you know, like when my cat Donkey died in July, I by some stroke of luck, I had arranged to have a little vacation that weekend, where I was going to go off into the mountains to walk around by myself for a weekend. I thought a hiking weekend by myself would be a good thing to do in July. And then all of a sudden this death happened, and I was like, oh, well, actually the timing couldn't be better, because So I was walking around in the mountains and reading Taoist texts, you know, the Tao Te Ching and stuff like that, and crying and journaling. And that was so, so helpful to just turn on a little tape recorder and cry and read, you know, Eastern philosophy and just like try to process that, because it really hurt me. It really hit me hard. But you know what? I do, now that I'm several months away from that, like I still, of course, like think of Donkey, see pictures of him, you know, sometimes get teary about him again. But I do feel like having gone through that walloping emotional time in July, I do feel that it somehow deepened me. I don't know how to say it otherwise. I do feel like I'm grateful to Donkey for you know, we were, I used to, you know, always say we were in love with each other. I used to say we should get married to him, you know, like joke that we were going to get married. But I'm grateful that our intimacy gave me that grieving process. And another thing is, like, acknowledging what I just said, grieving doesn't have a timetable. You know, it will occasionally, you know, surprise you and come back. I was watching a Broadway show recently. Jake Gyllenhaal was in it. I don't even remember the name of the show. But anyway, death. He talks about the death of another character in the show, in this epic monologue about losing a loved one. And I started crying. And it was so funny because I was thinking of Donkey, my cat, in like almost as a replacement for whoever he was talking. And I was like, wow, fascinating that I'm, you know, revisiting that and crying once again. And, you know, like that's okay. You know, I get frustrated with people who expect grieving to go a certain way, you know, like there's a story we just recorded, but still needs some work. So we might have this person re-record the story about finding out his friend was in a coma. And then when he finds out his friend is in the coma, he goes to the hospital to visit his friend. And he's in such shock to see that his friend might be dying that he goes off to get a happy ending massage at a Chinese sex massage parlor. And so he like goes off into his head and avoidance, basically. He's having a pleasurable experience that takes him somewhere else. And then he learns that his best friend died while he was getting that happy ending massage. So now he's got to deal with like the guilt and shame of, oh, Jesus, I was, you know, doing it. But I really like coached him through that story because, you know, he was like, I don't know if I should share this, if people are going to think I'm a creep or whatever. And I was like, no. I think it's important to share these kind of things because when we're face to face with something shocking or upsetting, you know, like, for example, I always worry that I won't cry at my father's funeral when that finally happens, for example, because I know that emotionally I'm very unpredictable. You know, like I know that like when something really heavy happens, I have no idea when or how I'll react. And I think that's okay. I think we got to give each other a lot of leeway for that. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's, grief is such a personal thing. It's, you know, my grandmother died. I didn't shed one tear. And I felt guilty about not shedding a tear. But at the same time, you know, it's like, it doesn't mean I wasn't upset. It doesn't mean I wasn't sad. It's just, I couldn't make the tears come. And I think we need to stop, you know, like you said, putting these expectations on people on how they grieve, how long they grieve, things like that. So I get you there for sure.
Grief Day by Day by my friend Jan Warner. She lost her husband and then she got very frustrated by people saying cliche things to her about grief. And she became very determined to say, to inform people, no, I can have moments of tremendous joy and still have moments of like existential, almost suicidal grief within the same, you know, minute. So she wanted to write a book of day by day meditations for people who are grieving. And she wanted to give it sections to show people it's okay to feel this way. It's okay to feel that way. It's okay. There's no timeline for it. There's, you know, like she really like very helpfully lays out that grief is a multifaceted thing. And, you know, you're going to feel a lot of different ways over time.
Yeah, it's not going to be the same day to day. That's for sure. All right, so let's go on to The Beginning and the End by Brenda Leonard. This story about a mother losing her baby suddenly.
And a gentleman walked up to me and said, "Are you Brenda Leonard?" For a moment there, like a bird, I just wanted to fly away. I just wanted to leave. Reluctantly, I said, "I am Brenda Leonard." He took my hand and he said to me, lips trembling, he held my hand gently. And the only thing he could say was, "I'm sorry. I'm sorry, but your baby is dead." I said, "Oh no! No, no! No, 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 God, no, no, not this, not this. This cannot be true. No, no, no."
Before we continue with discussing Brenda Leonard's story, we're going to take a quick break, and I'm going to allow my friends Adam and Nick to tell you a little bit about their podcast, Bottom of the Stream. And then I'm also going to tell you a little bit about Anchor, and then we will continue our interview with Kevin Allison from Risk.
Hello!
Ahoy!
My name is Adam.
And I'm Nick.
And we are the hosts of Bottom of the Stream, which is a weekly podcast searching for hidden gems at the bottom of Netflix.
Yeah, we're looking to find some great films which you may not have heard of, because there's a lot of weird stuff on Netflix.
Yes, and on the way, we're finding a lot of bad films.
But we're having fun.
We're always having fun, so come and join us. Come aboard as we sail the Netflix stream.
Yep, hop on the podcast boat.
Come and find us at www.bottomofthestream.com or on any good podcast app.
That's a tough one. You can feel her, like, her scream in, like, the pit of the deepest pit of you. So with this story, like I said, she's mourning the loss of her baby. She's talking about how it was sudden, but then she goes back and talks about the day that they had and how beautiful it was and how that's how she chose to remember the baby. Now, do you feel like storytelling can be a part of the grief process? Because it sounds like she is leaving it all on the stage there that night.
You know what? I was just talking about Jan Warner, who wrote Grief Day by Day. That's how we met. That's how I met Jan. When I first started teaching storytelling, I started teaching storytelling the same year I started Risk, because they went hand in hand. Jan came into my class and she wanted to tell the story of the death of her beloved husband. And she revealed at the beginning of the class that was her goal, to work on that story, and that he had died 6 months prior. Well, when there was a time for a break in the class, I pulled her aside and I said, "Are you sure you want to do this? Because 6 months, that's a very, very recent period to, like, be tackling something like that." And she said, "You know what? I'm so glad that you said that. That's very kind of you." She said, "I am going to these grief support groups like every other night and telling this same story and crying my eyes out with other people. But here, in this class, I want to tackle the same material, but start to craft it in a way that makes emotional sense, so that it's a cathartic experience for other people, and that maybe in seeing the catharsis that other people are experiencing from me having, like, expressed the journey I'm on, that will be a part of the healing process for me." And damn it, it really was. Like, she put together a beautiful story, and then the two of us started working on a solo show together about the same thing. But yes, like, there is a thing called narrative therapy. It's a style of therapy where you sit down with a therapist and you start, you know, crafting personal stories where you start arranging your memories in a certain shape, and you start to see, well, what's the takeaway? What do I make of some of these experiences? And it I can't tell you how often I've seen, I mean, it happens every time we basically work on a story with someone for Risk. But in my own life, what stories I've told on Risk, like, for example, there was a story I told on Risk called Man at Hawaii about a trip that I made to Peru when I was 17 years old. And when I worked on that story, I kept remembering things that I hadn't remembered in years. And then when I was like going, you know, you go through the first draft, the second draft, the third draft. By the time you're at like the third draft, you start to like see, oh, there's a pattern here that I've never recognized before. You know what? And so you can have incredible insights into your own thought patterns, your own emotional, your behavioral patterns, you know, and the way that life itself tends to go, where you can start to make a positive meaning out of things that you might not have totally emotionally understood before when you tell a story. Yeah. So yes, I think that that's absolutely the case. You know, Brenda Leonard is also fantastic. One of the things about her is that on Risk, our big hope is to have a wide variety of types of voices so that we can hear people from different walks of life. So Brenda is a Black woman from the South who is a diehard Republican and very, very Christian. And like, well, maybe I shouldn't say Republican. I mean, maybe that's changed in recent years, you know, but definitely someone who comes from a more conservative and Christian sort of background. And it's just like really, really interesting to hear how someone with a strong grounding in faith and family values and all that kind of thing is reacting to this sort of thing. And how, you know, she just inherently, I think, recognizes the value of sharing of testifying to this sort of thing in front of a community. Yeah, yeah.
Gosh, that story. Ugh. I hear that scream sometimes and I'm just like, man, she was feeling it. Before we wrap up, we're going to go into two more lighthearted clips. This next one, I hesitate to call it lighthearted because it is dealing with a dark family secret of a crime that did take place that is undisputed and a crime that may or may not have taken place. This story is One of Them by Joel Chenault in episode 928 of Risk.
So when I was in my 30s and I was really doing criminal law in Detroit, I had to learn a lot about the human body and what it takes to kill a human being and things about, you know, how quickly a person is likely to lose consciousness after they bleed from a certain part of their body, like an aorta or something like that. And so I decided that I was going to go up to the county clerk's office and pull Albert Roberts' death certificate. I read it, and it didn't say anything about stabbing oneself or being stabbed. In the space marked cause of death, it said suicide by cutting throat with razor.
She is such a born storyteller. She is so good. It was so intense, and I was like, I was sitting at work. I don't even think I worked for the entire time that I was listening to that episode. I was on the edge of my seat, just like, what's going to happen next? What's going to happen next? With this particular one, why do you... Her story is basically she's going through a family story that's been passed down from generation to generation about her abusive great-grandfather, I believe it was, who there's kind of a question about how he left this world after he attacked the family. So why do you think, this is just for fun, not fun really, but kind of fun. Why do you think her family was so adverse to even talking about the actual death, like how it happened, like if her Aunt Mildred did it or if it was he did it himself? Why do you think they were so scared to go there?
Well, I think there's a few different reasons. I think that, you know, first of all, it's very shocking for the family just to know that the patriarch of the family was so violent that he almost killed various members of the family. Right. So it's you know, everyone knows, well, that's kind of where we came from. You know, the guy at the top of the family was a lunatic and at one point tried to kill everyone. So that's a lot for them to swallow. But then I think she's also, I think the family is also incredibly careful about, one, the fact that the police view cases of violence among Black people differently than they do, you know. So even though her Aunt Mildred might have killed her great grandfather in self defense, I think they're worried. But also they're another Black family from the South who is also very Christian and like has this you know, like, you know, killing in self defense even is not kosher officially with Jesus in the Gospels. You know what I mean? So I think what Jill is getting at in that story as she goes along, like the story is really about her coming to understand the full extent to which she comes from a family of strong, capable women, Black women, who won't be, you know, who won't be fucked with, basically, if you want to put it.
Yeah, she said, if you fuck with mine, I'm gonna fuck with you, basically. And I love that story. It's so good. She needs to make that like a TV show or something. It's amazing. All right, and then we've got one last clip here. I don't want to talk about the clip too much because I want it to speak for itself, if you will. So this is T.S. Madison, the eulogy on episode 748.
So I'm sitting there like, bitch, is that dick really that good? You would come all the way from wherever the fuck you came from and break this funeral up like that. How could you break a funeral up like that? So the baby stopped crying. The wife stopped crying. The mama stopped crying. Everybody is looking like, what the fuck is going on? And this queen was really putting on a stage performance, bitch. Y'all hear me? With the, he took a good dick. So I'm sitting there like, well, when is it gonna end? And she stood right up there to the front of everybody. He took a good dick out of this world. He took a good dick out of this world. He took a good dick out of this world. Rolled and went back and forth in front of the casket. I wanted to leave. No, I didn't, bitch, I'm lying. I wanted to see what the fuck was gonna happen.
Okay, so that was the eulogy by T.S. Madison, who I had never heard of before the show, and I'm just, like, in love with T.S. Madison now. So this last question's kind of a fun one. If your funeral were to be disrupted, what would you want the person to scream out to the entire congregation or gathering? How would you want it to be disrupted?
You know, That is hilarious that you should say that. Yeah, I would have no problem at all if someone interrupted my funeral by pointing out what a great ass eater I am. Because that would be the equivalent, you know, I don't think I am so well endowed that anyone would be shouting about my dick, but they'd have high compliments for my ass eating abilities. You know, it's hilarious. It's now occurring to me that I didn't put two and two together when we were choosing clips for this episode, that there are three Black women from the South. But yeah, T.S. Madison is such a trip. A trans woman from the South who has done a lot of sex work, a lot of porn work, and is now just a personality, you know, just I don't know, just people just love her for her personality. And yeah, that was super, super, super fun to have her talk about a funeral that just goes off the rails because of some other trans woman who comes and starts interrupting it. And I just think that, you know, like, that's another reminder there. And I think that I'm glad we chose that clip. It's another reminder that there is always something hilarious and inappropriate and, you know, just like, you just can't predict all that is going to come into the death or grieving process, you know, like when we hear that story, we love it because we're like, you know what? Yeah. Like no one ever gets up at the funeral and celebrates how big that person's dick was. And there, that also gives you, you know, these five clips give you a really good idea of kind of the range of risk, you know, the range of emotional experiences that people do have around death is precisely the sort of thing that we're trying to get at with risk is like, well, here's the things you might not as easily and politely talk about on your more palatable family-friendly radio. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, if you can laugh at death, also, I want to put this out there. If you can laugh at death, you can laugh at anything. You can get through anything, I think. So that's, also with these stories, I think, like you said, they do run the gamut from primal grief to profound understanding, and then of course we got the humor at the end. And I mean, I think if we can just look at it and talk about it and make it less taboo, like you do a lot of the subjects in the show, it can, you know, alleviate a lot of the fear that we have surrounding it, even just losing people, not just losing ourselves, but losing people in general.
Oh, absolutely. It doesn't, talking about it doesn't replace feeling all your feelings and really processing it and going deep through the whole journey. But talking about it definitely opens some windows. You know what I mean? It creates a little more space for you to begin to process things a little bit more completely, I think, you know? Yeah. The more we share with one another about these difficult things, the more we kind of strengthen our muscles. It's kind of like exercising our muscles for being more emotionally, for having more emotional flexibility.
Well, Kevin, I'm going to close it up with that. Thank you so much for being with me today. I really appreciate you taking the time. I do have one small request before we go, though, if you could. Do you mind taking us out the way you take out your risk listeners after every episode?
Absolutely. Folks, today's the day. Take a risk.
Thank you so much, Kevin.
Thank you. This has been a real pleasure.
Thank you again to Kevin Allison for taking the time this weekend to speak with me. You can find Kevin on Twitter at TheKevinAllison. Also, you can find Risk on Twitter at RiskShow. Risk capitalized, the whole word risk capitalized. And the website is risk-show.com. You can find the full episodes to the clips that we listen to just by searching the name or the episode number. And I suggest you do listen. They're very good stories. They're very enlightening stories, I think, and it'll definitely put this episode into perspective a little bit. And there's also a million other, they've got 10 years worth of episodes on that website, so definitely take a look and listen. Take a look and listen. Listen. After you're done here with me with this episode, go ahead and listen over there. Also, there is a website called The Story Studio that Kevin runs, where it teaches people how to tell stories about their lives and make them engaging, make them exciting for the listener. And I think it's something that could be pretty invaluable to people that are in podcasting. And so I'm definitely going to be looking into it in the new year. And you can find it at thestorystudio.org. Let's close up this episode. So CoffinCast can be found on Twitter at CoffinCast with a capital C. And on Instagram at CoffinCastPod. If you have story ideas, suggestions, constructive feedback, or if you just want to say hey, you can email me at coffincastpod@gmail.com. You can also find my Patreon at patreon.com/coffincast with tiers starting at $1 with some really great benefits. Now, the moment you've all been waiting for. The winner of the 2000 listen giveaway. The winner will get a Diet Love Pass t-shirt. They'll also get a copy of the book Stiff by Mary Roach. And lastly, a Funko figure from the Haunted Mansion. With no further ado, I did this with, just to let you know the process, I did this with random.org. And I made a list of all the people's names. And I hit randomize, and the person at the top of the list was the winner. So the winner is Dan Allen. So Dan Allen, you need to email me at coffincastpod@gmail.com, your t-shirt size, and also where I need to send your prizes. They should be with you by New Year. So it's going to take me a little time to get everything all together, but I will get it out to you before New Year's. But you have 5 days to reach out to me, or else the next person on the list is going to be the winner. And I'm not going to say who that is, because if it happens, I want them to be surprised. And I have a special treat for you. I'm sharing a song that ties in the entire episode. I know Coffin Cast can get depressing, and it can get sad, and it can remind you of things you don't want to be reminded of, i.e. your own mortality and the mortality of those you love. But I think that the song I'm going to play for you is life-affirming. It's a great song. It's very uplifting. This band is so, so talented and so good. They're from Austin. They're called Uncommon People. I can't sing their praises enough. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and close the episode with their song, Life. And I'm also going to include their YouTube channel and their social information on the episode description, so you can find them and find their videos. So with that, let's close up the episode. Remember, life is but a dream walking, but death is going home. Have an excellent week. I'll see you next Monday.
Put the time in.